Morning. It's 11 minutes before 8 a.m. You are tuned into Raven Radio, KCAW in Sitka, where it's 49 degrees under overcast skies. Today is Monday, May 19th, 2014. I'm Melissa Marconi-Wenzel with Raven News. The defense rested its case last Friday afternoon in the sexual assault trial of former Bletchley Middle School principal Joe Robidoux. The case is now with the jury. KCAW's Robert Woolsey attended all the proceedings over the week. He discussed the major issues of the case with Emily Foreman during Raven Radio's live newscast that evening.
Do you have any sense of how long it will take to reach a verdict?
Not really. Superior Court Judge David George acquitted Robidoux on one of the four counts of indecent exposure he's facing because the victim testified that she covered her eyes and left the room before seeing anything. But he still faces three counts of indecent exposure in the second degree, and these acts also allegedly involve touching himself in a sexual manner, and four counts of sexual assault in the second degree, and one count of just plain assault in the fourth degree. So that's nine counts that the jury still has to decide.
I understand it was a pretty dramatic day in court. What happened?
Yeah, the defense started to build its case. It brought forward three of its own witnesses to challenge the credibility of the state's lead witness, a former Bletchley teacher who alleged that Robidoux came to her home and assaulted her by placing his hands around her neck and saying, "This would be easier if you were passed out." He later returned to her home, allegedly exposed himself and touched himself in a sexual manner. The woman's former student teacher testified that she had seen inappropriate conduct by the woman and Robidoux at school and had reported it to the district. Another witness for the defense, a former boyfriend, said that her attentions toward Robidoux had caused friction in their relationship and led to a breakup. But the most dramatic witness by far was Deb Riva, Joe Robidoux's wife, who testified about her suspicions that Robidoux was being unfaithful, her learning that he was having affairs, that's her word, affairs, with three women, and the pain of dealing with all that. The judge ordered a recess when Riva broke down. When she returned to the stand, she described her efforts now to repair her relationship with Robidoux, a relationship she described as worth fighting for.
And what about closing arguments?
The state's case is built on the idea that past consent does not imply future consent. One of the victims admitted to a one-night stand with Robidoux in 2011. District Attorney Jean Seaton had to address consent, the women's reluctance to accept Robidoux's attentions as they escalated from friendly partying to unwanted sexual advances. The women all testified that they had relationships within Bletchley, socially and professionally, that they did not want to jeopardize by becoming involved with Robidoux. Seaton also characterized Robidoux's behavior as predatory. He identified women who were vulnerable, made them become dependent on him somehow, and then selected a venue, often an empty classroom, to make an overt sexual gesture by groping them, exposing himself, and touching himself sexually. At no time did Robidoux rape or sexually penetrate the women. It was repeated, unwanted advances, sometimes at school, sometimes in their home or at his. Jean Seaton said, "If only one woman had come forward, it might have been a different determination. Three of them means Mr. Robidoux engages in forced sexual contact." The defense, on the other hand, emphasized the fact that the women all said yes before they said no. One even had sex with Robidoux 2 years ago. Attorney Julie Willoughby argued that this meant that Robidoux could not have recklessly disregarded their lack of consent, which is what is required by the sexual assault statute. She disputed the use of force. She urged the jury to use common sense. All the women were easily able to get away from him when he engaged in one of these acts. She argued that they continued to socialize together. She told the jurors, "You have the right to be upset with Mr. Robidoux outside this courtroom. This was ungentlemanly behavior, bad behavior. It might have been harassment, but that is for another courtroom, a civil courtroom."
And that was KCAW's Robert Woolsey speaking with Emily Foreman about the sexual assault trial of former Bletchley Middle School principal Joe Robidoux. The seven-woman, five-man jury will reconvene this morning in Sitka Superior Court. In other news, the Blue Lake Dam expansion is about three-quarters of the way done. And, well, wait, maybe this would be better off with a soundtrack.
Blue Lake Expansion Project is Sitka's largest public works project and is well underway and on schedule.
And that's a promotional video made by the city to explain the Blue Lake Dam expansion. City representatives played it at the Chamber of Commerce as they gave an update on the project. The expansion has a lot of moving parts. First, the city is raising the existing dam by 83 feet. That's about three-quarters done, City Engineer Dean Orbison told the Chamber. The city is also completing a new powerhouse to house three newly installed turbines. And the city is building a new intake. That's the tunnel that brings water from Blue Lake to the city. Orbison reminded his listeners that the primary purpose of Blue Lake is not generating electricity. It's providing drinking water.
And it runs through the mountain, through an unlined tunnel, just right through the rock, blasted through there back done in 1961. It was fantastic rock then, and it's fantastic rock today. It's unfiltered water, comes straight from Blue Lake. We put a little bit of chlorine in it, and we drink it.
So far, the city has continued to rely on Blue Lake for drinking water throughout the construction. But this fall, contractors will have to shut down the existing plant and switch over to the new one. For about 2 months, the city won't be able to use Blue Lake for either drinking water or generation. That outage is scheduled for September and October. During that time, the city will generate electricity from Green Lake and will rely on Indian River for drinking water. Sitka used to get all of its drinking water from Indian River before switching to Blue Lake, but the state has since tightened drinking water standards. Indian River is no longer an approved source, so the city will rent a water filtration system for those 2 months to the tune of $4 million. After Orbison spoke, utility director Chris Bruton ran through the funding for the project. Sitka has received about $57 million in state grants, and the city has borrowed about $82 million in the form of municipal bonds. Sitka still needs to raise about $18.6 million, which city officials hope will come in the form of a low-cost loan from the Alaska Energy Authority. Those might sound like big numbers, said Bruton, but he reminded his audience why Sitka relies on hydropower in the first place. A diesel turbine burns 24,000 gallons of fuel a day.
One day at the Blue Lake plant produces about the same energy, and it uses 387 million gallons of water for one day of operation at Blue Lake. And that will take about 0.27 inches of rain to replace that in the lake. We get about 131 inches of rain here of year, according to some NOAA charts. So that's by far the best choice of fuel. It's free and we get lots of it.
Bruton said that even with recent electric rate increases to pay for Blue Lake, Sitka's electricity rates remain relatively low.
1993, a summer average residential was paying $113. Come July 1st of this year, when we implement our rate increase, they'll be paying $118. That's remarkable that the rates have been, you know, relatively steady for that period of time. And what that means is, same thing with Blue Lake. Once the project is done and all the costs are finished, we're going to have essentially stable rates for the next 20 or 30 years, barring any unforeseen disasters. So the folks that were wise enough to build Green Lake in the past really made an excellent decision. I don't know of anyone that's opposed to Green Lake these days and would rather us be running diesel for the past 30 years.
The Blue Lake contractors are offering public tours of the project. The next tour will be this Sunday, May 18th. Well, it was last Sunday, this past Sunday. You can find links to sign up as well as links to videos about the project on our website, kcaw.org. And Juneau's Alaskan Brewing Company will be featured on the second season of a reality TV show about the U.S. craft beer industry. KTOO's Casey Kelly has more.
In 2007, Scottish beer makers James Watt and Martin Dickey started BrewDog, now one of the most popular craft breweries in the U.K. Last year, they crossed the pond to team up with the Esquire Network on Brew Dogs, a show about the American craft beer industry. Watt and Dickey travel to small breweries in the U.S. to sample local fare and brew up a special beer using unusual ingredients. With the Sam Adams Brewery in Boston, for example, they put lobster and clams in the brew kettle during the beer-making process.
I'm a bit confused. I don't know if we're making beer or making soup. Either way, I want to eat it.
Chowder.
Chowder.
And in Portland, they teamed up with the Deschutes Brewery to make a beer that replaced hops with the plant's Scotch Broom and Yarrow.
Hops from Oregon have fueled the American craft beer revolution, but we decided to mix it up a little bit, and there's no hops at all in the beer that we're making here.
At the end of the show, they have people taste that brew and give it a drink it or dump it vote, and then that's kind of the show.
Alaskan Brewing Company spokesman Andy Klein says the Brew Dogs have been filming all around Juneau. They were not available for interviews, but they've posted pictures of themselves on Instagram and Twitter at the Alaskan Brewing Plant and drinking one of the company's beers while enjoying a view of Gastineau Channel.
Their idea is to try to use the outdoor nature of Alaska and somehow get that into a beer.
As for specific ingredients and the premise of the episode, Klein is tight-lipped due to a non-disclosure agreement.
I'm not supposed to say anything more.
But like a lot of craft breweries, he says Alaskan is no stranger to using unique recipes.
Whether it's using the alderwood for smoked porter, using spruce tips in our winter ale, or when we use birch syrup in our birch bock, or in our perseverance ale, we used fireweed honey. You know, there's local ingredients, and trying to put a little bit of Alaska in every bottle is a big part of what we do.
Seattle's Elysian Brewing was featured on an episode in the first season of Brew Dogs. Head brewer and founder Dick Cantwell says it was good exposure for the company.
It airs from time to time. It seems like every time it does, I get an email or a Facebook post or something.
The beer Elysian made for the show is called The Fix. It features ingredients produced by two other Seattle companies, Theo Chocolate and Victrola Coffee. It won a silver medal at the Great American Beer Festival. Cantwell says collaboration and experimentation are two of the hallmarks of craft beer.
We just can't help ourselves. We're always talking to each other and sharing ideas and enjoying each other's company.
Klein says he also noticed that as the Alaskan brewing staff worked with the Brew Dogs.
Outside eyes come in and people have great ideas. And I mean, they're great, great creative brewers who have great ideas. So it's awesome to be able to work with them.
The episode featuring Alaskan Brewing Company will be the final show of the series' second season and air later this year. The Esquire Network is on cable and satellite in Alaska. The channel is co-owned by the Hearst Corporation, publisher of Esquire magazine, and NBC Universal.
And it's